Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Welcome to today's edition of the Social Network Show. This is your host, Jane Kawaski, an experimental psychologist, along with Jim Nico, CEO of Social Network Intermedia. We have something special to tell you about today. Jim, would you like to do the honors?
Yes, I shall. If you're wondering where the best podcasts in the world are, wonder no more. Along with us and everyone else at the top, it's podcast1.com. The Social Network Show is on podcast1.com, and we'll see you there soon.
Well, thank you. We're so happy to be joining Podcast One. You'll find all our archived shows there, too. Now, on to today. You are going to be hearing from the public blogger, that is to say, Kendall F. Person. If you go to thepublicblogger.com, where writing is a performance art and every post is a show, you will be welcome to The Neighborhood, a collision of the arts, a feast for the imagination, literature at an altitude simply unheard of. This is a multimedia blog with original prose combined with works of visual and musical art. And he's quite the storyteller. Kendall, welcome to the Social Network Show.
Well, thank you very much. So very glad to be here. I appreciate it.
One of the great writers online. I mean, your blog is just, it's kind of legendary, man. We're honored to have you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely.
Well, I've been following the story that you posted the last episode of the last installment, I guess you would say, the third of three. And it's very interesting that right away there were some very poignant comments, and I encourage everyone to read that. It's about the right to life and death. Interesting storyteller. Anyway, Kendall, can you tell us about your growth as a writer, as the part that public blogger has played in it?
Well, you know, I'd been writing actually for more than 15 years. I started off as an author. I wrote three novels, Capturing Spring, The Remembrance, and An Angry World. And it kind of seems like another world away. I was working full time then. I was a lot younger then. And I thought that I knew everything it was about writing. But my life kind of took a different, strange direction. And I stopped writing for 15 years completely. I actually walked away from the whole craft. And a friend of mine, a close friend, who actually was one of my biggest fans, he said, this was two years ago in August, he said, well, if you're not going to write another book, why don't you blog? And I'd heard of blogging, but that's all I did was heard of it. So I started off at Blogger, and I thought that, to see how far behind the times I was, I thought that blogging, each post was a blog. So the first three posts or articles I started three separate blogs. And then I realized, oh, the posts are like articles and the blog is like the magazine. So by then I'm trying to feed three separate blogs on Blogger. Well, I never really got the concept down of building up a fan base, but I learned fairly quickly the kind of whole blogging concept. And after I had so many shows that I call them their posts or stories, I put them together, and I decided to move over to WordPress and put them into one neighborhood. And I called that thepublicblogger.com, and that's how they got started. But by then I was actually writing nonfiction editorials. And so I was no longer just a fictional writer. But unlike when you're writing novels, and the feedback, I mean, if you're lucky to go to to have readings and where people have already read the book, then you get feedback or you'll get a few fan letters. But because of the whole, you know, media technology, and you're able to get the comments right away, I was really kind of humbled and taken back at the depth of the comments, and I realized that those 15 years that I was you know, not doing what I was supposed to be doing, that they weren't wasted years, that I had, that this was now who I was. So I was this fictional writer, and I had all these life experiences that I started writing these inspirational, motivational, editorial type pieces and commentaries. And I realized how much I had grown and understood the craft of writing itself. So the public blogger is really, it's 15 years in the making, but Kendall F. Person is the same writer, mm-hmm. so that's why, hence the actual name of the blog, which I never refer to it, it's Kendall F. Person, the public blogger.
Ah, okay.
But because I was building this neighborhood, internally we refer to it as the neighborhood, and that's kind of the name that stuck. And of course the URL, the address, is thepublicblogger.com. But it's kind of the Kendall F. Person is this fictional writer, and the public blogger is the non-fictional writer, if that makes sense.
Okay, so that's where, because I wondered about that, the public in there. Not that I suppose public doesn't necessarily mean nonfiction, but a lot of blogs by their nature are public. So I was wondering what...
right.
Was there some special aspect to the public that you wanted to include, or that in your mind, your construction of what you were doing there?
Yeah, there is. There, when I started, the neighborhood was already taken, and I knew that I didn't know exactly what I was doing because I was learning as I was writing, and I was learning the entire blogging process, the platform. But I knew that I didn't want this to be just me. I knew that I had a lot of things to say, but I wanted to absorb other people. I literally wanted to build a neighborhood, and I thought that the public blogger was kind of a demonstration of that, that public being for everybody, and not just everybody to read, because it very much is an all-inclusive format. I mean, I try my best when I write to write for it, regardless of the story, whether it's a religious, you're still not insulted if you're an atheist. Whether it's about like the problem with gay, you're still not insulted if your differences, if your beliefs are different than the storyline. It's very all inclusive, mm-hmm. but also all inclusive as far as the entertainment. Because at the end of the day, I'm so incredibly honored that so many people are find inspiration and motivation. But I always say at the end of the day, I consider myself a performer. And I was able to bring in all these different artists, recording artists, visual artists, other written word artists. And that's what makes it public. I mean, there's no, we don't pay. There is this sense of community, both inside and outside. And that's where I got the, it was kind of my second choice from the neighborhood, but it worked out just as well, especially as far as the URLs, easy to remember, thepublicblogger.com.
If you were to look back over time and your early experiences in writing, what do you think you would have thought if you could see forward? In other words, as a novelist, could you imagine where you would be at this point in time, and what would you have thought? What would the younger Kendall have thought of what you're doing now? What do you think?
He wouldn't have believed it. The younger Kendall was more self-centered and more of an outright entertainer. I guess I won't say self-centered. I was only a fictional writer, although. Each novel is set in actual locations, so each novel has this kind of feel of nonfiction, so I guess he was in there, but the young Kendall would not have foreseen this. And I really think, Jim, that had I not been into this self-imposed exile of those 50 years, that the new writer, the public blogger, wouldn't have existed, because I think I would have just continued going as a fictional writer. I had, you know, Stephen King was my favorite author, and I was a huge, huge movie buff, and that's all I really foresaw. I never foresaw short stories. I didn't see myself as a poet, and I think I now probably have around 10 poems. I definitely didn't see myself as a motivational writer, although in retrospect, I can go back and I can hear the people when they would bring out certain quotes when I would be at book readings, and they oh my gosh, I love this quote, it meant so much. But I didn't take that as then. I just took that as they were enjoying the writing, not that there was something deeper inside.
That is very thought-provoking, I think, because it seems like the 15 years, when you take a break from something, a lot of times it keeps sort of percolating in the background of your mind, and you keep adding the experiences that you have in the meantime, which I think really matures things. It kind of is like, you know, baking them in the oven and then they're ready, you know, to eat. And that is, now you mentioned in fiction that sort of has a nonfiction cast to it. And I'm curious about, when I first saw that title, The Right to Life and The Right to Death, I believe that's the run. Is that word for word correct?
Right. The name of the series is The Right to Life, but each episode has its own subtitle. So the final episode you're talking about, the subtitle is Life and Death. But the whole entire series is called The Right to Life.
Okay, and you know, at first that sounds, you're going to be talking about abortion rights or not, you know, right to life or whatever. And yet that isn't what it was at all. I mean, it dealt with that in a sense. But were those dates and events and people, is there any basis? I mean, I'm sure there's some basis of someone in reality, but were the executions, for example, is that a historical fact?
Those are actually, and what I sometimes combine fact and fiction, but I don't do it to confuse. So there's completely separate paragraphs. They're separated by visuals. They're sometimes separated by music. But for instance, in the first episode, which was called An Eye for an Eye, the entire storyline regarding the Canadians, Jean-Guy and Chantel, that was an actual Canadian Supreme Court decision. Mm. That was a factual story. I think they call it creative nonfiction.
Right.
But those were facts. But the story about Betty May, and we were talking about the execution, the entire process of how Texas, the state of Texas, performs its execution with the pardons, with the board of pardon parolees, that's factual. So it does give it this air that it's nonfiction, but the story of Betty May itself was fiction. But I want to give, because it can easily be mistaken as factual, and not everyone is going to write back, I do a lot of research to make sure that even in a fictional story, there's factual. I mean, if I'm writing science fiction, which I don't think I've only done once, or something of that nature is different, you know, because it's set in 2050. But if it's something like this, and especially if it's something that's going back and forth between real, or even more so, the Right to Life is one of my favorites because it stirs such passion that I don't want to confuse the reader in giving just illogical explanations just to kind of buffet the fictional story.
Okay, well, let's go into that a little bit more in the next segment. And also, I want to talk about those awards that you gave on blogging. And so we'll talk about that in our next segment.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Visiting my 75-year-old aunt the other day when her phone rang.
Hello? It's you again.
She seemed nervous. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't think I need any more life insurance.
The caller was doing a great job keeping my aunt on the line.
Okay, so you need my credit card number?
My aunt went to get her purse, so I decided that I would ask a few questions. Well, as soon as I introduced myself, the caller hung up.
Abrupt the Crime Dog here. Recognizing the signs of fraud can be difficult for older people. Often they're very trusting and consider it impolite to hang up. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to educate seniors so that these scams can be reported to local law enforcement agencies.
Financial fraud can include identity theft, fake check and wire transfer scams, investment and credit card fraud, and online charitable solicitations. Unfortunately, only 1 in 5 of these crimes are reported. To learn more, go to www.ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where Jim Nico and I, Dr. J, are talking to Kendall F. Person, the public blogger. And Kendall, we were discussing some of the stories that you have on your blog recently, and I was impressed with the immediacy of the comments. You know, as soon as it's up, people are reading it and relating it to what has happened and is happening in their life. And it seems to me you really are creating an online network of, or community, or the neighborhood, as you say. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I also love the multimedia nature, and I haven't come across that very often. Maybe it's a common practice, but you have combined nicely visual art, and sometimes the visual is of a statue or a carving or, you know, sculpture, and also the music. And what I really like about it is that you're taking us into areas that maybe we wouldn't otherwise come across. And that is a real benefit, I think. So what gave you this idea of putting in the visual, the audio, the songs, and so forth to be part of your entry of the blog each week?
Yeah, well, yeah, beautiful question. I felt like that I arrived to blogging late. And there were so many wonderful, wonderful bloggers and wonderful blogs. I thought of a concept to kind of buffet who I was as an individual. And at the same time, there were these new formats of making music and of people presenting their arts that just didn't exist, back in the day. So I started to get to know some of these artists, both visual and recording other written word artists, and invited them to collaborate. So the first, I call it the first season, the first third of the blog, you won't find the music, but as I got, because I wanted everyone whose music was involved, who art was involved, I wanted to know them. I wanted them to feel that they were a part of the neighborhood. So as I started to know the people, that's when you start pulling in more of the show, and it give it an entire show feel rather than just a read.
Right. And, you know, another thing I noticed on your blog is that you had at the end of 2013, and I'm not sure if that was before that or not, but you had the Public Blogger Awards, sort of an awards show that you conducted on your blog site. What was the beginning of that idea?
Well, each platform, they have their own. There's so many awards that go around, and they're kind of like each blogger can just bestow an individual role award, most inspirational blogger. I hope this doesn't sound bad at all, but I had received so many so quickly, and I wasn't, and I don't like to leave any of the people who bestow them on me, just kind of like they didn't mean them a lot, and they did. So I came up with a community award show that I thought this is a perfect way to give back. So it was a smaller one. It was called A Celebration of Community. And it was really successful. So I decided to make it an annual event. And I moved it from May to New Year's Eve. I invited live performers. Well, they were streamed, but live performers. And we really took that seriously, where there's a panel of judges. There's a number of ways to be nominated. And I realized that it was a success, not just by the number of viewers or the number of likes, but by the winners, if you read in the comment section, where they are actually giving acceptance speeches. So it turned out that was the bloggers really felt good about receiving the Public Blogger Award, and we felt good about the amount of hours it takes to put it together.
Mm-hmm. So this was a real-time event, even though it took place online.
Yes, it was. Real time, yeah. It debuted. In fact, the first 2 minutes are can never be seen again because the first 2 minutes are actually live. Mm. The other entertainers, there of course are videotaped. But they're videotaped in a way that it's still New Year's Eve, whether they made up sets. However they presented their segments, it's still new. It's New Year's Eve. But the first 2 minutes is live.
So, Kendall, in all of your experience and in the beauty of your site and in all the multifaceted media, what is it about what you're doing now that's most fascinating you or even surprising you?
The level of intensity by both the viewers or the slash readers and the actual resident artist. There's some, for instance, Ivy So Robinson, who has now been in the neighborhood for over a year. She has new music that she literally debuts in the neighborhood. We have a visual artist that come back. Where we talk on the telephone. It's the fact that we've really created this social media, this social network within the neighborhood, that it's actually come to life. Most of the artists, at least half of the artists that you hear or see, we've met. All of the Red Word artists, when we put together a series, we're meeting and talking up to a month before the first segment comes to life. Where, in fact, one of the people I'm down here visiting I'm in Long Beach, about 6 hours from home. We've met in the neighborhood. He was from Lebanon. So I am surprised at that, and very, very happy and very, very honored that it has come to life. And I think that the viewers sense that and they see that when they are watching a show.
That's a great idea. I'm really glad to hear that it is having that effect, because it's a neighborhood that sounds international, intercultural, yes, interracial. And yes, I often cite The Filter Bubble by Eli Pariser, because he wrote about how the methods of web advertisers and so forth create sort of a filter, causing us only to see what we are used to seeing.
Yes.
And I think reading The Public Blogger is, or visiting it, thepublicblogger.com, is a great way to step outside of the rut we've worn ourselves into in cyberspace and experience something quite different. It's like taking a virtual trip somewhere new. And so I would urge our listeners, take a vacation. Take a vacation from your online routine.
You know, I think I can have said it any better. That's it. When people come, you kind of leave your, whether you know it or not, you're leaving any preconceived notions at the door. Because again, regardless of the subject matter, in fact, so many commenters have wrote, I was prepared to hate this. But we don't, there's no taboo subject. There's just none at all. We've written the religious right, the problems with gay, race, everyone that's considered taboo, but we don't write in a sense to offend anyone. We write in a sense to provoke thought and ultimately to entertain. So I really appreciate you saying that, Dr. J.
Well, it's something that is very noticeable, and we have dealt on our show a lot with cyber harassment, the incredible rudeness of many people online. And I thought, well, now, if that happened in the neighborhood, what would your response be?
Well, there are two. So great. I love this, Lisa, your questions. The out of the 9,000 comments, only between 5 and 10 have I not allowed to actually appear. And that's only because it doesn't matter if you dislike or if you have a strong opinion against.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're insulting for the sake of insulting, that doesn't fly, because that's not what we're trying to accomplish, and it can go downhill very, very quickly.
Right.
But if you're leaving a comment, and it could be a strongly worded comment, and you're against the topic on hand, not just the subject matter, but the topic, then I will address that personally.
Uh-huh.
I don't address every comment because I want the neighbors to talk to each other, but I address those purposely, and generally there's a pullback, because again, I'm not firing back. I'm just responding.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
It's interesting. So, what's in the future for you, man? I mean, like you said that, like well, writers don't get paid and stuff like that. But on the other hand, there is something in the blogging world where money does exchange hands. So, well, and you know, what do you see? What do you see happening?
Well, season four, which I haven't let count the box. I've actually been advertising it, but I haven't really let count the box. That is something where it does take revenue. There, we've been able to do a lot of it. What we've been doing on an absolute skeleton budget, but we're looking into sponsorships. We're looking into other ways to raise money. I'm very comfortable at the WordPress platform, so I'm not looking so much into leaving, but we do have to begin coming up with ways to raise funds and to get these revenue streams going, because season four is different. It's we're raising the bar even higher, taking some of our shows and for the social network show, I'll throw out a little clue. We want to bring them to life, and they have their built-in readerships, and all of our advertising is already done in video format, and we want to start bringing the neighborhood shows to life. And those do take revenue. They do take planning. And season four starts February 2015. So I do have to start taking a different route, which is one reason why down in Los Angeles, trying to figure out ways to bring any investors or philanthropists or sponsorships. But that is a something that artists don't like to talk about. But I was in the nonprofit world, and no one in a nonprofit likes to talk about raising money, mm-hmm. but you have to.
Right. Well, that we wish you the best with that, Kendall, and thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Okay, and that was Kendall F. Person of thepublicblogger.com. And thank you for listening. We hope to see you on iTunes and have you add us to your playlist so you can automatically receive each show with our wonderful guests and important topics. And we'd love to hear from you, so please get in touch with us via the contact link on our webpage at thesocialnetworkshow.com. where you can listen to more interviews, read the latest on our blog, and you'll be able to replay our live show from 5 p.m. Sundays on News Talk 720 KDWN here in Las Vegas. And that's at the foot of our homepage. And you can follow us on Twitter at SocialNetShow, as well as hear this show on our website, iTunes, or on our new home, podcastone.com/the-social-network/show. That'll make it easy for you to find, or you can search for it at podcastone.com. And please check out our videos on YouTube, where our channel is simply Social Network Station. Please be safe online and off until we welcome you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.